Hey there, welcome to LSAT Demon Daily. I'm Eric, a teacher and tutor with the LSAT Demon. Joining me is LSAT Demon student and Ask Button hero, Joshua. Joshua, thanks for joining.
Thank you, Eric. It's been a pleasure.
Yeah, so congratulations on your recent victory on the LSAT. Maybe just let's jump to the headline. What was your recent score?
173. It's awesome. Within my range. I'm very happy with that score. Thank you, LSAT Demon. Thank you to all the team.
Yeah, and where did you start to get to your 173?
I started at a 151. That was actually, I took my diagnostic was actually my first official LSAT administration. I really regret that now because I feel like I could, if I had more time, I could go back or I could keep studying and probably score higher, but you live and you learn. And 173, I don't know, maybe I'd do worse.
It's a score to be proud of, and a 22 point improvement is nothing to sneeze at. It's amazing how frequently, well, I guess it's infrequent that I hear people say that their first official test was also their diagnostic, but you're definitely not the first person I've heard that from. I think a lot of that is just probably just from a lack of exposure, lack of information about what this test is and what it might take to improve at it. From that moment when you took the official test, what was your first reaction to the LSAT in an official, like, did you right away, did you feel lost? Did you immediately feel like, oh, I should have prepared for this? Or did you get the sense that, hey, this kind of makes sense, I just should take some time to work some more on it? Like, what was your takeaway after that official diagnostic?
A brutal experience. I hopped in. I had read, like, I had grabbed a book off of a shelf at a Barnes and Nobles and like flipped through a couple pages about logic games. And I'm like, you know what? This doesn't seem too bad. I can probably handle this. And I get to the first test, the first ordering game. And it's just like one of these really simple web ordering games that it, like, now I could solve it in like 12 seconds. And it just completely flattened my brain and I just flipped out. I don't think I got through like half the section. So I was just clicking random. Yeah, I mean, logic games just started off completely impossible to me, just totally impenetrable. I don't have the engineer brain, the STEM brain. I've been in, doing philosophy undergrad classes forever. It was a brutal experience. And, I was like, okay, yeah, I seriously need to learn what I'm doing here. And getting on LSAT Demon, learning the actual approaches that professionals, 170 scores use, enlightening to say the least.
So what were those things that you discovered once you started diving a little deeper into the test that were going to get you to a 170 plus score?
Well, of course, learning any way to consistently do logic games. The first time I approached a test, I had seen mark your rules down. And if you have a placement rule or an anti-placement rule, you cross it out or you place it in that slot on the board. And I was under the complete misconception that basically the only games were ordering and grouping, like basic grouping games. And a lot of the important improvements in logic games, specifically to me, came through watching Ben and Nate's videos and finding out that the formats for the basic formats for the basic layouts for basically every game, those are just so helpful. And if you have, even if you have like a related, even if you see a related game that's somewhat similar to the one you're doing, you can really adapt that and score and probably figure out what you're supposed to do. a million times better than if you had gone in with no organization whatsoever. Mm-hmm.
They begin to feel fairly repetitive, right? It's not like there's a ton of very rarely do you run into a logic game where it's like, whoa, this is different. I haven't seen this before.
And even those novel ones, you can usually adapt some other structure to fit what you're doing. But through practicing LG, you really just come to understand like, oh, this goes here, this goes here, this goes here. And it's a lot about the wording too. If you know that, if you know what the LSAC means when it says a certain word, obviously you're going to have some inkling of how to organize your games better. And that's probably the most important part of mastering logic games.
So as you improved at the games, as you learned some diagramming techniques that made sense for you, became familiar with just the world building process on the games, you probably found that at the end of the day, the most important thing was still reading comprehension, right? Like mistakes are mostly going to happen from just misreading things on the games, not from making some sort of diagramming error.
Yeah, absolutely. I remember on my first test that I actually took with the demon, I was reading through all my rules, not double checking them, just went through it once. Okay, that's all right. Went through it once. Okay, that's all right. And I had like 40 different worlds, and I was like 10 minutes into the section on my first world, or on my first game, and I was so lost again. I was like, I'm never going to get the hang of this. This is impossible. I'm never going to do law ever. And then I realized I had misread a single rule, a single word in a single rule. And it was like, and it just changed the entire nature of the game. Mm-hmm. And I mean, yeah, really every section factors into every other section. If you don't have reading that's why I feel like reading comprehension and understanding every word in the section is the most important. If you need to get one section down first, reading comp first. That's how I feel.
And how do you get better at that?
Reading comprehension is the most difficult because I feel that I had a good background. Reading comprehension was always my easiest section, I guess. Mm-hmm. Maybe not easiest. It was the hardest to improve on, but it was the section that I started with the least errors in. I was always able to read passages and kind of deduce the important information. But improving at it, I always was like -3, -4. And improving at that was really difficult. Yeah. LG, I always had a lot of problems. Or, sorry, LR, I always had a lot of problems in. Just because I'm not used to factoring in very specific information or like very complicated small packages of information. Mm. But from a long passage, I can usually deduce the flow or the structure of the passage, which I feel is a lot of RC. Sure. And then in LG, just knowing what each word means is the important part. And then being able to create diagrams and worlds, yeah. Of course. And LR, yeah, I'd say LR was definitely my most challenging and is my most challenging section. But yeah, if you need to study or get down a section first, I feel like without adequate reading comprehension skills, the rest of the test is going to be really difficult for sure.
Yeah, it really is a test of reading comprehension on every section, LG included, although those are sadly not much longer for this world. But LR as well. So you mentioned that LR you found to be the most challenging. Maybe dig a little bit more into why you think that was, and then what turned it around, where it is that you felt yourself starting to improve with logical reasoning?
In the long term, LR was the most difficult. Well, obviously I started with the most mistakes in LG, just because I was completely unfamiliar with it. And LG, I think I was like I must have been -8 or -9 when I was starting. And then, slowly you get it down, -0. I feel like that's going to be very difficult for people who want to score 170 plus. I don't feel like I could have. I'm sure I could, mm-hmm. with more practice. But L by the end, LG 0, 0, 0 every time. And LR minus 1, minus 2. Same with RC minus 1, minus 2. I always found it very difficult to reduce those last two on LR and RC. But specifically LR, I'd say a lot of my difficulty came from parallel reasoning questions. Parallel reasoning was always really difficult because it's a lot of conditionals, a lot of information that you have to take into account at the same time, and you're comprehending all of the possible implications of each conditional on every other conditional at the same time, and it can just get overwhelming. And I would never recommend, like Ben and Nathan say, if you find yourself diagramming on LR, you're doing it wrong 99% of the time.
Mm-hmm.
So I would never recommend doing that, but definitely, I think a big improvement came for me in understanding anybody who's ever had me answer an ask button question will know that I go on a long, long spiel about understanding the necessary and sufficient condition
uh-huh.
and conditionals in general.
Mm-hmm.
Those are the single most important thing to get down. If you don't understand what a necessary condition is and the difference from a sufficient condition, the LSAT is going to whoop you every time with that over and over again until you get that down.
Yeah. Yeah. And even just not even needing to think about it in terms of necessary conditions and sufficient conditions, just understanding on a basic level what those two words mean, what it means that something is necessary, what it means that something is sufficient. Crucial, absolutely crucial, and will continue to be so in law school and throughout legal practice. I've heard of people reading, law student friends of mine's reading judicial decisions where the judges maybe even mixing up sufficient and necessary. So, yeah, important the whole way through. You mentioned working with the ask button. Talk to me about that.
That's been a great, I would recommend anybody whose score goals are in the 170 plus. I mean, hopefully everyone's score goals are in the 170 plus, but if they're not there yet, or if you only need a 165, understandable. But if you're trying to get to the 170 plus and you're working with the demon, you'll probably be invited to work on the ask button. And I highly, highly recommend it to any student with the demon trying to score 170 plus, any student in general, really. It's been a great experience. I don't know if I could have scored so high if I hadn't had just the constant reminder, like, oh, I should be teaching someone, I should be getting my hours in for the ask button. It's just a good, it's just an excellent motivator. On top of in the weeks before, I would say I kind of took a cramming approach to the LSAT. For like 4 or 5 weeks, I would take a practice test pretty much daily. I don't know if it's so much a cramming approach as much as it is kind of like I'd say 2 months of like constant studying and then ramping it up to a practice test daily. I don't know if I would really call that cramming. I just call it like intense studying, I guess.
Yeah.
I would recommend cramming, by the way.
No, I suspect that probably works for someone like you who was already quite strong at LR and RC and who needed to fill the gap with LG. I think the games, you can make a pretty large amount of progress in a short amount of time. So, yeah, that approach, a game a day, a full PT a day, probably not recommended for most people. Sounds like it worked out all right for you, given your particular strengths and weaknesses on the test. But yeah, can't argue with the results in your case.
Yeah, if I could go back, definitely would have spread it out over a longer period of time. Definitely wouldn't have taken so many tests. I took 3 tests before I was scoring in the range that I knew I wanted to score in. And I have no idea why I did that. Looking back, it's
3 official tests.
3 official tests before I knew I could get, like, I had scored a 175 like once at that point. And I was like, oh, okay, I can do that. Like, easy. I'll just go in and score it. But no, you have to be scoring consistently in the range that you want to be scoring to reasonably get the score you want. And you only have five tries.
Yeah.
And
you took the test five times?
I did take it five times, yeah.
So those last couple attempts, you were had put yourself in a position where you knew you didn't have to do your very best. You just needed something like an average performance for you, and you were solidly in the range.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was scoring like 173 to 177 around the end of my studying. So pretty well. I had scored a 179 once. I was like flipping out. No nice. 180s. Never got into 180. I don't know.
It's hard to do. I did it one time on a PT. Yeah. But it's you got to have some luck involved as well. There has to be, I think, for most people, a little bit of luck involved to score an actual 180. It's tricky.
It's impressive still. I mean, it can't be all luck.
No, you don't luck, and you do not luck your way into the 170s. For sure. Like, even if that's at the top of your range, and every once in a while you're hitting 170 something, that's still in your range. It's like, yes, the top end of your range, but if you get there, it's because you're pretty darn good at this test. Like, you can, too many students I hear have negative self-talk where they're saying like, oh, well, that was just a lucky shot that I scored a 174. It's like, no, give yourself a little more credit. Sure, your range is broad, but no, you don't get there on accident.
Right. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. But yeah, I would always recommend never, if the lowest score you want is a 170, have five practice tests where you're scoring above a 170, and then take it.
Yeah.
If that's the lowest score you want. Yeah, yeah. That seems
not a bad piece of advice.
And I'd say practice tests are full practice tests are important, but yeah, maybe once or twice a week at most instead of seven yeah. a week. Well, one, you'll run out of material. Two, there's like 90 practice tests, huh? Unless you're studying for a long time, one or two practice tests a week just to get familiar with the format. Mm-hmm. And I think four-part practice tests are actually really helpful as well. I was taking a few four-parters, and I think it really improved my stamina with just reading everything and just not getting worn down over time.
Sure. Yeah, good to have that experience of actual kind of test day environment. That's good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, cool. At least one or two of those for sure. I'd always recommend that.
Great. Well, what's next for you? You've got your 173. You're applying next cycle in the fall?
Yeah, I'm applying all T14s, hopefully, USC, alma mater, UCI, and I believe UT Austin.
Nice.
And we'll see if anything else pops out, I guess.
Excellent. Well, I'm glad we could help you out, but you were the one who had to get there. You put in the work. Eventually, you realized don't take the test until you're actually happy with your practice test scores. But very well done. Again, a 22-point improvement. That is something to be very proud of. Josh, stay in touch. Let us know what happens with your cycle, where you end up going. Wishing you all the best and excited to hear what's next for you.
Great. Thank you, Eric. Yeah, good talking to you.
All right. Thanks, Joshua. Email daily at lsatdemon.com if you'd like to ask us a question or share some LSAT or law school admissions news or share your own LSAT success story. Thanks for listening, all.